Hello, and welcome to Mentor Dino. I'm your host, Caitlin Riffsier. I am an architect and founder of Mentor Dino. I firmly believe that architecture, engineering, and construction professionals can achieve true success by embracing human skills as their guiding principle. So each week, I interview amazing professionals in and around the AEC industry as a way to share stories, inspiration, and advice for others finding their own unique career path. Thank you to all of our current subscribers, and if you're new, we'd love to have you join our community. So if you like this episode, please do me a favor and hit subscribe, like, or leave a comment below. It really helps others be able to discover this resource and support them on their own career journey. So let's dive in. I really hope you enjoy this conversation. Welcome to the Mentor Dino podcast. I would like to welcome Evelyn Lee, founder of Practice of Architecture in San Francisco, California. Thank you, Evelyn, for taking the time to speak with me today.
Yeah, thank you for having me on, Caitlin.
And so I know just saying the founder of Practice of Architecture is not enough to fully describe everything you are doing and your kind of journey to how you got to where you are today. Do you mind kind of giving my audience a little background on a little bit about you and kind of high points, I guess, because we could probably talk for an hour on just that.
I feel like this, as I get further in my career, this conversation gets longer. But I have an architecture background. I have an MArch and a BArch. I went into traditional practice. I always knew, I would say, in school that I wasn't the best designer, like with a big D. There's definitely people that could design buildings better than I could. I kind of liked designing things around buildings, so operations, processes, policies. I ultimately went back to school to think about whether or not I had chosen the right career path for me. I got my MBA, I got my MPA, found that I missed the people within the built environment and working with architects and the stakeholders of their projects. So I found a way to play in that space in a design firm running a strategy group at a firm called MK Think here in San Francisco. Ultimately left there for a number of reasons, ended on the consulting side of brokerage. So when I talk about brokerage, it's commercial brokerage. So Newmark, Knight Frank, CBRE, I'm sure y'all have seen some signs of Savills, Studley's, you know, these type of brokers in with like for rent signs out on office spaces. They tend to be national, if not international firms. And I was doing a lot of workplace strategy then. So a lot of people trying to consolidate office space even pre-pandemic, because office space behind what they pay for data and what they pay for their people is really expensive. And then I ultimately ended up at Slack, helping them develop operations, processes, and policies around the design of their offices. But then that all shifted during the pandemic, and we started developing more new operations, processes, and policies around how we work as a company. And to bring it all full circle, throughout all of this, when I went to get my MBA and get my MPA, I found that I was seeking out a lot of different ways of learning new things that I never knew about in architecture. And Practice of Architecture started as purely this curation of all of these articles and books that I thought that architects should be aware about, and has really turned into a few things. So I advise, and I'm a fractional COO to a number of small and medium-sized architecture firms. Shepley Bullfinch just announced that I am joining their board of directors as an outside board member. I also advise startups in the architecture space. So I'm joining Gumption, just came out as Stealth. I also am an advisor to Kanoa and Ace Lab. And practice of architecture also provides resources for small and medium-sized businesses on the business operations side in particular. And then we have a community called the Practice Community and Lab, which Caitlin, you're a part of. Yep. And then we have the podcast Practice Disrupted. So a lot of different moving pieces, but it's really all to help bring learnings from outside of practice and outside of the profession and the industry into the industry to help them continue to adapt and remain relevant.
Yeah, because I think there's a lot we can learn outside of our industry. I feel architects tend to just be focused on themselves a little bit too much. And then when, you know, you're isolated, you can only see so far. It's like being a fish in a fishbowl. You can't tell that you're in the water around you. But when you can get somebody looking at you, you're like, what are you doing? You're in the water.
Yeah. So. And I think, you know, there's so many different reasons for that. But when I think about even all of the friends that I've accumulated throughout the years, you know, you have so many work friends or even university friends that you stay in touch with, it kind of becomes really easy to be self-isolated within those groups, right? If it was funny because I was having a dialogue with somebody on LinkedIn today about happy hour and how happy hour doesn't mean culture, but she's like, I don't want to hang out with architects after I'm done with architecture. She's like, I actually want to hang out with other people. And I was like, that's funny, because even when I like go off and hang out with other people, it tends to be architects from other firms. So then it's like, well, when do we learn about things that are happening outside of the industry if all of our friends are all architects? Yeah. As well.
You yeah. make it not like three times removed to be able to go find somebody right. outside yeah. the industry.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you have any advice for somebody inside the industry looking to pivot their career? I know you kind of pivot into policy and tech, but yeah, do you have to go to for your MBA to?
No, no. I mean, there's some great podcasts or some great episodes on Practice Disrupted from people that talk about people who went and pursued their MBA, and it's all for various different reasons, including my co-host Janine. But what I typically tell people is to kind of track where they find they get the most energy. So, you know, if I think the architecture field itself is expanding and the roles within architecture firms continue to expand. So acknowledging the fact that the role that you might not be in might not be the right one for you, but that doesn't mean you have to step out of architecture entirely. Two, I think it's really about understanding what you're passionate about and whether and if it doesn't exist in architecture, then where do you go off and find that somewhere else? I feel like a lot of people say, like, I'm going to go into tech because the pay is better, the benefits are better, I can do UX. And I get into a lot of these conversations, these mentorship conversations that I take with people, talk about to individuals, usually younger sometimes, but I'm actually getting a lot more mid-career professionals asking me the same thing, saying, like, what do I do? What if I want to go into tech? And there's a lot of different areas where skills that we have in architecture do translate to other spaces, and design skills and the way we think and approach problem solving go to other spaces. I guess this is a very long-winded answer, Caitlin, and I usually like to be a lot more to the point, but it's never a one-size-fits-all for anyone. So for me, it always starts with doing a lot of self-exploration and you know, Laura Weiss in one of our very, very first podcasts actually talked about how you can prototype your way to a new career, like take a class in something to see if you're interested before you make the jump, test the waters. So do a lot of self-exploration. And then if you find that that's the right path for you, then begin reaching out to people on LinkedIn and connecting and saying, like, hey, how did you get there? And begin building out your network that way. So many people reach out to me and they're just like, I just want to do something different. Help. And that there's only so much I can do to help at that point in even like a 30-minute coffee talk. And because, you know, or they're like, I want to do strategy. And I was like, oh, well, you can do so many different things in strategy. What do you want to do? So really understanding what you want to do and what you're most passionate about, and understanding if you wake up on Sunday, like what type of work do you need to be doing to be really excited about what's coming on Monday?
Yeah. And regardless on what job you have, you're going to have ups and downs in the day to day anyway. If you have a bad day in architecture, well, you're going to have a bad day in tech. You're going to have a bad day doing whatever.
Yeah.
But no, I definitely resonate with that, because I know when I first stumbled upon your podcast, I was at a point where I was like, I need to do something else. And it took me 3 years of like discovery and like, hey, I want to do this, but hitting stop points on how can I make this happen before Mentor Dino started. So it takes a while to discover. And then if any doubts sit in, or like I had a lot of imposter syndrome, like who's going to listen to me on anything I have to say? But it's not a one size fits all either, because I thought about, well, what could I shift into tech? And then I was like, oh, I don't have that drive, that passion for it. But when you find that fire that lights inside you, it's completely different. And it took me a couple of years to find it.
Yeah. And I think, you know, if anything, give yourself grace, right? Like give yourself the time to find that. And use that exploration to talk to a lot of different people. And I feel like the more people that you can talk to, even if they don't give you an answer, the conversations you have with them and how you respond to their questions might help you get to your answer.
Yeah. Or lead you somebody else to talk to, or something else to check out you didn't know existed. So yeah.
Yeah. So sorry. No easy answer to that question, really.
So what did your day-to-day look like when you were working for Slack versus an architecture firm?
So there's a few things. So when I was in an architecture firm, it was very much project-based, but it was, I was running projects. Mm-hmm. So I was managing teams, right? With Slack, I was what they would consider like an individual contributor. So I wasn't so much running projects as I was working across multiple different project teams. So my role inherently was a little bit different than on an architecture, as a project manager in an architecture firm. Not to say there's actually absolutely a role for project managers in tech, saying that, but it varied from day to day, especially during COVID. You know, they would spin up teams with like, we hear that other companies are starting to go back to the office. Is this something that we should look into? And then we would, you know, and then they're like, they would bring together all of the people that they think would need to be a part of that discussion. So there are days where like I could be brought into new meetings for new conversations that got spun up that day, pretty high level. So I did appreciate that. And then there were days where I was just working through other things, like looking at all the feedback in our channels about where a lot of our employees were feeling a little bit more stressed out and trying to identify fixes for that. So at one point, I think similar to everyone else, we're all going to Zoom. Everyone needs to have all their cameras on all at the same time, but like realizing that it wasn't the best mental health space for all of our employees. And we weren't going to, we always said from the beginning, we're not going to get this right from the start. But realizing when we needed to make some changes to create a better employee experience too.
Yeah. How was, I guess it kind of pivots, but now that you're full-time practice of architecture, how has your day changed flipping over to being an entrepreneur full-time? Because I know you're doing that on the side for ages.
I was, when I had a steady income. No, I think it's been very scary. I feel like anything that you hear an entrepreneur has gone through, like even in the last couple of months of being my own boss, like I've gone through. So, you know, making sure that I can pay all my bills. Before I was doing a lot of self-funded, some of it was self-funding through my paycheck at Slack to make sure that I could carry Practice of Architecture. Others things were through partnerships or sponsors. So really continuing to build out those partnerships and sponsors. We launched the community. So the community had sat dormant for a little bit, and I'd actually closed down the sign-up page because I didn't feel like I was serving the community as much as I could. So reopening that community, making sure that I'm dropping all of the research that I find and I'm doing on a day-to-day basis into that community. And then, I don't know, I feel like I'm overloading myself with work. I spun up 100 conversations with 100 architects because I felt it was important for me to have conversations with people on the front lines that are doing the work and making sure that any resources I'm putting together is relevant to them. So I'm working my way through those, working on sponsorships. I just sent out a curriculum for a partner with a major design school on building out courses for their executive program. So talking to architects, talking with partners, and then trying to find focus time to actually develop templates. So that's also big on my to-do list right now.
Yeah, I know it's always hard to find time to build and grow at the same time.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And if I had more money, I would pay to build or pay to grow rather than build myself. But yeah. Yeah.
Nope. I'm definitely right with you there. I think my entire bonus check from last year went towards Mentor Dino. So I still survive on my day-to-day paycheck to keep this thing running. So,
we'll work on that together.
That's why I joined your community, because it was being surrounded by professionals that have so many diverse backgrounds. Like, there are still a lot of architects in that group, but seeing even the conversations I have with my podcast and how different people's day-to-day is, the different types of things you can work on, and just the exciting things going on outside my neighborhood type scenario is absolutely amazing. And just the people you talk to, because I know my company's been up for a little over a year and a half, and just the people I've met across the country has been amazing. And if I didn't have this, I wouldn't have done it. I would have just been heads down in project work. So you never know where something's going to take you.
Very true.
And talking a little bit more on the podcast side. So I know I've been listening to Practice Disrupted off and on for a while now. How did you and Janine decide to start the podcast?
That's an interesting story. I think for me, because I'm not a big podcast listener, even being on this side, I can't say that I'm listening to any more podcasts than when I started Practice Disrupted. Janine would hate for me to say that, but she's on a break from the podcast right now, so she can't have a say. I love you, Janine. I have been interested in, I'm always interested in various different ways people learn and digest information. And I have been and have I've been through my entire career a very strong writer, most recently for Architizer, but I work for Contract Magazine and Architect Magazine and in Habitat way back in 2005 before people believed you can make any money writing for a blog. So I was interested. I approached my friend Mark LePage, who does Andre Architect, and he started doing this new podcast thing. And he's like, oh, you have it. We had a good conversation about podcasts. He felt I had a good podcast voice for the medium. And I was like, yeah, but now I have to learn how to do a podcast. And I feel like the perfectionist in me, the architect perfectionist in me, was like, I'm not going to spend my time to learn how to do a new medium. And this was pre any of this AI editing software capability too, right? To learn how to do the production side of that. And I definitely didn't have the money to do that. So I kind of shelved it. But then Mark said, we're going to start Gable Media. It's going to be a consortium of architecture and design podcasts. I have a production team that can support. Do you want to start a podcast? So that's what we did. And we're with Gable. And I still love Mark and the Gable team. But we were with Gable the first 2 years and then have since spun off on our own. But that was really the impetus. And then I had imposter syndrome too. I was like, no one's going to want to sit and listen to me as an individual interview other people, which is why I brought in Janine. And we've been looking on and off for a while for some type of project to partner on. So the podcast became a great mechanism to do that through.
Yeah, I know. I know I take a CDT course through Charisse, and she runs the RCAT podcast, and she let me know of Gable Media existed. And so reached out to them just to see what options they have. With my small budget I have, I couldn't go through with them, but I was able to find somebody else that could help me get everything through, because there's a lot with podcast editing. Regardless if it's video or just audio. And I know the Adobe Creative Suite has great options that make it so much easier with AI and grabbing everything to edit, that I can't even imagine when you guys started not having all of that to help me learn quickly. Because it's not like we have all day to like just mess around. It's quick searching to find how to edit something, and having somebody to help is important.
Absolutely.
So you're soloing the podcast right now. Is Janine coming back this season?
She will be back for one episode this season. I actually need to get back. I need to get better at inviting her when I interview people. The one thing I always gave Janine a hard time about was that she didn't like us to front load or pre-record too much. And I kind of love batch recording, because that leaves a ton of weeks open on my calendar if I'm not anxious about getting things out, because we do 40 episodes a year. But no, she left because she's focused on growing Apostrophe Consulting, and Practice Disrupted always fell firmly under Practice of Architecture. So I understand her need to refocus. But the door is open. The door is always open for her to come back. And I think if I coordinated with her more often, I think she would actually have been in more conversations this season. It's just another thing to coordinate on top of everything else. It's not intentionally that I didn't leave that I left her out, but she's always welcome back. If I can keep the workload light on her end to be a co-host, I think she's happy to join conversations that she's interested in. I also don't think she would be interested in half of the conversations we've had on AI, to the extent that I'm interested in too. So I need to make sure to invite her to the topics that she's most interested in being a part of.
Yeah, I think Janine's Apostrophe business was kind of one of the first stepping stones to I can do something that helps teach people. And teach architects. So you never know where you're going to find something. And so she's definitely been an inspiration to myself. So I'm glad that she's taking time to focus. I understand.
But we'll make sure she hears that part and not the part that I
I'll do a chapter marker highlighting on my thing and skip over yours.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Janine, if you're listening, I want comments below. I want to hear from you. But so as she's focusing on Apostrophe, you're focusing on Practice of Architecture. Where do you see everything going?
I don't know. So, some people know that I'm a part of a membership organization. So that's inevitably taking up a lot of my time. And I think it'll take up even more of my time next year than it has this year. My husband and I had planned for that when I asked them whether or not I was could run to continue my work that I'm doing in the AIA. So I'm being mindful of that. And because of that, I'm not expecting tremendous growth out of these first 2 years. Thankfully, I got a lot of stock in Slack before we were acquired by Salesforce. So that always helps. But really, I think, you know, you'll begin to see more partnerships and opportunities within practice of architecture for individuals like yourselves and others who are interested in expanding the products and services that architects are a part of. And the hope would be that if it doesn't create new businesses altogether, that it expands the realm in which we practice. So it's not so much of an ebb and flow, and it expands the tide of, or, you know, it brings in more revenue, especially when your clients aren't building or things are going on hold. And it enables you to continue to, I don't know, maintain and keep your employees and grow what you can offer them in terms of salary and benefits over the long run. That's ultimately where I would love to be headed. So that's the ultimate goal. Practice of architecture, I always had it in my mind that it was going to be an incubator and accelerator of new ideas coming out of the AEC industry. I actually think there's an opportunity for it to get there sooner rather than later. And we're setting up the partnerships to do that. So that's your time. Yeah.
Cause you were working full time and doing it on the side, and it's not easy to do that. And there's only so many hours in the day to still sleep, spend time with your family, go have fun.
So. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Although it's been interesting to see how AI has shifted that, like where you spend your energies and what you can begin to automate. So I'm constantly looking at ways to build in automation and tools that helps me shortcut things that would take much longer to enable me to do more with less. So, yeah.
Yeah. And that's a great segue, because I know you're also a board member of Women Defining AI. What opportunities and discussions are occurring with that group?
Oh, I think there's, I love that group. That group is my primary connection back to the tech world. I felt like one of my, I feel like we create an identity for ourselves as we go through our careers. And one of my biggest struggles with leaving Slack and Salesforce was leaving my foot in tech and not having that firsthand experience anymore. But I feel like I'm getting that through Women Defining AI. We have executive team members in there from some of the leading tech firms in the Bay Area, but also honestly globally. And it's exciting to see who is in there. And we're spinning up a number of different thought pieces. So the first quarter, it was focused on law and a little bit of ethics in technology. I'm spinning up one that's going to be coming out in July, focused on business operations, as you might imagine. Yes. We have another one to focus it on education and what it does to education, learning, and development. I think there's another one that's being spun up in how healthcare is beginning to use these type of technologies. So high-level discussion forums. We also have launched and I'm looking at with their permission, but also borrowing some of what they've done, doing this in practice of architecture and the community, is they have this group that talks about just like helping people understand the basic definition of AI and wrapping their head around different LLMs and how to use that and how to build a chatbot and et cetera. So you can think about how would I take this new technology and apply it to my everyday work, begin to think about how to integrate it in. I think that's really important because I feel like so many of us in architecture are waiting for that new tool that takes over AutoCAD or something, or AutoCAD to come up with that new tool that blows us all out of the water. But in the meantime, there's just ways to begin to think about using AI for so many different other things. And I, so just getting a basic understanding of that so you can do that. And so we run cohorts of that in the Women Defining AI group itself. So a lot of things, the basic mission and vision of that group though is to close the gap, the gender gap between women and men in tech. That gender gap is as big as architecture, especially when it comes to leaders in that space. So we see AI and its integration as so nascent that there's an opportunity for women to lead and be leaders in these various different areas. So that's ultimately what we're trying to do with Women Defining AI.
Yeah. No, and I find a lot of people misunderstand AI, or people just think of ChatGPT and that's it. But there's so many other opportunities, and I love seeing all the different like iteration tools, how we can iterate faster, because when you're just trying to come up with options, it can take a lot of time just to iterate. But if I could iterate a bunch of options in 20 minutes and give it some factors to pick and choose how I pick the top ones, then I can get somewhere a lot quicker with the client. I didn't need to spend a week iterating on something that they're going to hate most of it anyway. And it's right. Not like, but I also feel on the architecture side, if they don't think it's ChatGPT and that's it, then they're on the full other side and they think like it's going to take over. And architects aren't going to have a job because now it can just render and do anything for you. And what would you say to kind of those extremes within our profession on how they view AI?
You can do a whole podcast on, you can do a whole episode on this. We actually, I actually just recently, I think episode 151 of Practice Disrupted, just interviewed the co-founders of Women Defining AI, and we framed this question in multiple different ways. The interesting thing, and I post a lot about this on LinkedIn too, is, you know, a lot of architects talk about AI in the context of our move from hand drafting to CAD, and then CAD to Revit, and Revit to AI. And my response to that is, the move from CAD, like all of that, the hand drafting to CAD to Revit, was all contained within the AEC space, right? AI is something that is affecting every level, every industry, across multiple sectors. So it's a little bit harder for us to kind of avoid some adoption, and it's already happening on our phones in apps that we are probably unaware of. So yeah. So you're already in it, one, whether you like it or not. And given that you're already in it, you know, my take on that is better to understand it than to ignore it completely. And that all of these things have always ever been a tool for us to create. So if we think about it as a tool for us to do something better, I think there's just a better mindset to approach it with. And if it does take over, for instance, construction documents, there is a real value opportunity there for AI to shift where we spend a lot of our time, and also shift, get paid more for where we bring the biggest amount of value to our clients on our projects. So for me, AI is nothing but opportunity. But you have to understand it before you write it off completely.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And it gives opportunities for if somebody wants to go off on their own, regardless if it's an architect or something else, they can help do that in a smooth manner that you don't have to be working your evenings to keep up with your clients. But if you're in a large firm, like I know I'm in a large firm right now, we already have scripts to help us do really mundane tasks a lot quicker. It's very similar. And we still need the knowledge on how something comes together. I find AI is still a little behind. If I were to start to research the tech side, but like the technology of building products, they're a little bit more inaccurate, and I'm excited to see where that goes. And I actually met a group of students at Carnegie Mellon University that's actually starting to tackle that resource from an AI and AEC perspective. So amazing. I am curious to where they're going. And like, I've got a survey I got to answer for them still to help guide them to the right people to connect to. But they came to one of my communication strategy, like presentations. I'm like, how did you find me? I'm not AI related. Like, and it was fascinating. I'm like, I want to know so much about what you're researching. So
yeah,
I'm more find it fun.
And I think it's, we can either end up using these tools that end up, we can end up using these tools that get built for us without our input, or we can find a way to input these tools that are while they're being created. Mm-hmm. So I think that's, you know, a lot of people are like, well, architects aren't software developers. That's not our space. But if somebody is building the next AutoCAD, wouldn't you like to an architect to be a part of that process rather than not? So you don't have to lead the charge. You don't have to code it yourself. But I think we definitely need to be engaged.
Yeah, because I think we give good input on how we work day to day, and they can help find the challenges on how can we change it differently. It's like how we talk to our clients. We don't just build the same thing that they just did. We try to advocate how they can work more efficiently and better. So I find it full circle how it all comes together.
Yes. Uh-huh. Absolutely.
And I always like wrapping up my podcast with this final question, and it's, what advice do you have for young professionals just starting their career?
I think, there's so much advice to be given. I think, well, welcome to architecture. It's not all bad. Remember that your career path is a journey. There is no destination. I am somebody who has changed my careers, I would say, no less than 3 or 4 times, gone through serious pivots. And everything that you have done up to this point gives you a different perspective in any career that you hope to pursue going forward. So I think a lot of mid-career professionals that I talk to even say like, oh, I've committed so much to the profession, or even architects coming out of school. I had a whole extra year of school other than my peers. How could I ever think about stepping away from this? And I don't think you should ever think about, you're not stepping away from everything you've done. I think you're stepping toward what you want to do, and to frame it that way. I know I'm one of those people that believes that everything that, you know, if you always get that question, if you could change anything mm-hmm. about your past or you live, you know, and I kind of like to appreciate that everything that has happened to me up to this point has made me who I am. So all of the stuff that you've done and all the education you accumulated has given you a very unique perspective on the world. And those are, and all of those things, no matter where you go, whether you stay in architecture or go somewhere else, or even stay in architecture for 20 years and decide you want to do something else, all of those tools will always be, all of those are a part of your toolbox going forward. So just remember that and always keep the path open. I think the more open, the more opportunity you have to pursue and land in places that will make you happy in the end. So work's not such a drag.
Yeah. And even like you said before, you, now that you've kind of left tech and missing having your foot on that side, I'm sure you felt the same way leaving architecture. And it's just, hey, where are you firmly placed? What are you doing? How are you shifting? And how's your body weight shifting in that moment? So
yeah. And that's honestly, that's a little bit why I stayed so involved in the AIA, even while I moved into tech. So I think you can find ways to keep that balance, as they say, and to be a part of the communities that you want to be a part of. And then also I just think talking to more people rather than less people about where you head always opens doors, as you said, Caitlin, to mm-hmm. other conversations. So I don't know, being fluid and agile.
Agile, adaptable, and learn about yes. yourself. I think it's probably the theme for you just learning about yourself, and who knows where you're going to be in 5-10 years from now. So
right. And I hope, actually, I mean, I would hope that even 10 years from now, I'm in a different place than I am today. So, yeah.
Yeah. But if anyone has any questions for you or wants to learn more about Practice Disrupted or Practice of Architecture, what's the best way to get a hold of you or follow you?
Yeah. So I do a lot personally on LinkedIn. So feel free to follow me on LinkedIn. I think it's Evelyn Lee.
I'll find the handle for it.
Okay, you'll find my handle. So feel free to follow me on LinkedIn. There's a newsletter you can join on Practice of Architecture. There's a community, Caitlin, that we can point them to. We'll leave a link to the community in the show notes. Go listen to Practice Disrupted across all of your favorite podcast listening platforms. We are over 150 episodes now, which is kind of hard to believe. And then I'll be around. I'll be traveling a lot next year. So if I'm swinging by, I always say in my Practice of Architecture newsletter, any events that I'll be participating in, check that out and be sure to come up and say hello.
Yeah. And I know I'll be at the AIA National Conference. So I know you'll be running around super busy. I will try to find you at some point and at least say hi.
Yeah. It'll be easier this year than next year, I think. But
yeah, exactly. Next year, it'll be a sign with a giant hand waving, and that'll be the only way you know what's going on.
Yeah. You just carry your Mentor Dino sign around. Like one of those Asian tour guides with the...
Yeah, I was talking to Giselle Santos, and I was like, so if I hire high school kids to run around AIA National Conference in inflatable dinosaur costumes, do you think I'd get kicked out?
Oh, that would be fun.
And she thought it was great. I'm like, oh, well, that would be a way to get college kids or something in, and I'd pay for them.
Well, I think high schoolers, I think there's usually a student... I don't know if there is this year. I'll make sure there is. There usually is an ability for students to at least get on the expo floor. So,
yeah, that's all I need. I wasn't going to pay for a table.
It's in Boston next year. So,
okay. I'll keep track of it for next year. But thank you, Evelyn, so much for taking the time to speak with me today.
Thanks, Caitlin, for having me. I appreciate it.
I hope you enjoyed our discussion today. Learn some advice to take with you and see how our industry is all tied together to create the world around us. Check out the description below for any links or resources we discussed. If you liked the episode, please do me a favor and hit the subscribe button. Give me a thumbs up and leave a comment below. It really helps others be able to discover this resource and support finding that career path that best works for them. If you know someone that has inspired your own career that you'd like me to interview, let me know in the comments below, or you can reach out to me via my website or LinkedIn. I'd be happy to share their story or your own. Thank you again, and I cannot wait for the next career story I get to share with you next week.